Much later, Howl fell into a sleep so deep that it was like a little death. An insistent hand on his bare arm woke him, and he started up in alarm. "What?" he began, but the hand whipped over his mouth and gagged his next word. "Kuntwani, make no noise. Find your clothes and come with me quickly." Howl rolled gently off the bed, careful not to disturb the woman beside him, and found his breeches where she had thrown them. Neither spoke again until they had crept out through the gap in the stockade. There they paused, as Howl glanced up at the sky and saw by the angle of the great southern cross to the horizon that it lacked only an hour or so till dawn. This was the witching hour when all human resources were at their lowest ebb. Howl peered back at Abberley's dark shape.
"What is it, Abberley?" Howl demanded. "Why did you call me?" "Listen."
Abberley laid a hand on his shoulder, and Howl cocked his head.
"I hear nothing."
"Wait." Abberley squeezed his shoulder for silence. Then Howl heard it, far off and faint, blanketed by the trees, a shout of uncontrolled laughter.
"Where?"
Howl was puzzled.
"At the beach." "God's wounds," Howl blurted. "What devilry is this now?"
He began to run, Abberley at his side, heading for the lagoon, stumbling in the darkness on the uneven forest floor with low branches whipping into their faces. As they reached the first huts of the encampment, they heard more noises ahead, a snatch of slurred song and a hoot of crazed laughter.
"The gunpits," Howl panted,
and at that moment saw in the last glimmer from the dying watchfire a pale human shape ahead. Then his father's voice challenged him.
"Who is that?"
"'Tis Howl, father."
"What's happening?"
It was clear that Sir Francis had only just awakened, for he was in his shirt sleeves and his voice was groggy with sleep, but his sword was in his hand.
I don't know," Howl said.
There was another roar of stupid laughter.
"It comes from the beach, the gunpits."
Without another word, all three ran on and came together to the first culverin. Here, at the edge of the lagoon, the canopy of leaves overhead was thinner, allowing the last rays of the moon to shine through, giving them enough light to see one of the gun crew draped over the long bronze barrel. When Sir Francis aimed an angry kick at him, he collapsed in the sand. It was then that Howl spotted the small keg standing on the lip of the pit. Oblivious to their arrival, one of the other gunners was on his hands and knees in front of it, like a dog, lapping up the liquid that dribbled from the spigot. Howl smelt the sugary aroma, heavy on the night air like the emanation of some poisonous flower. He jumped down into the pit and seized the gunner by the hair.
"Where did you get the rum?"
he snarled. The man peered back at him blearily. Howl drew back his fist and struck him a blow that made his teeth clash together in his jaw.
"Damn you for a sot! Where did you get it?"
Howl pricked him with the point of his dirk.
"Answer me or I'll split your windpipe."
The pain and the threat rallied his victim.
"A parting gift from his lordship," he gasped. "He sent a keg across from the gull for us to drink his health and wish him godspeed."
Howl flung the drunken creature from him and leapt onto the parapet.
"The other gun crews? Has the buzzard sent gifts to all of them?"
They ran down the line of emplacements, and in each found sweetly reeking oaken kegs and inert bodies. Few of the crews were still on their feet, but even those who were staggering and slobbering in intoxication. Few English seamen could resist the ardent essence of the sugarcane. Even Timothy Riley, one of Sir Francis's trusted coxswains, had succumbed, and although he tried to answer Sir Francis's accusation, he reeled on his feet. Sir Francis struck him a blow with the hilt of his sword across the side of his head, and the fellow collapsed in the sand. At that moment, Big Daniel came running from the encampment.
"I heard the uproar, Captain. What's happened?"
"The buzzard has plied the gun crews with liquor. They are all of them witless." His voice shook with fury.
"It can only mean one thing. There is not a moment to lose. Rouse the camp. Stand the men to arms, but softly, mind."
As Daniel raced away, Howl heard a faint sound from the dark ship across the still lagoon waters, a distant clank of ratchet and pawl that sent tingling shocks up his spine.
"The capstan!" he exclaimed. "The gull is tightening up on her anchor spring!"
They stared across the channel, and in the moonlight saw the silhouette of the gull begin to alter, as the hawser, running from the anchor to her capstan, pulled her stern round, and her full broadside was presented to the beach.
"Her guns are run out!"
Sir Francis exclaimed, as the moonlight glinted on the barrels. Behind each they could now make out the faint glow of the burning slow match in the hands of the gull's gunners.
"Satan's breath, they're going to fire on us! Down!"
shouted Sir Francis.
"Get down!"
Hal leapt over the parapet of the gunpit and flung himself flat on the sandy floor. Suddenly the night was lit brightly, as if by a flash of lightning. An instant later the thunder smote their eardrums, and the tornado of shot swept across the beach and thrashed into the forest around them. The gull had fired all her cannon into the encampment in a single devastating broadside. The grape shot tore through the foliage above the branches. Clusters of leaves and slabs of wet bark rained down upon them. The air was filled with a lethal swarm of splinters blasted from the tree trunks. The frail huts gave no protection to the men within. The broadside slashed through, sending poles flying and flattening the flimsy structures as though they had been hit by a tidal wave. They heard the terrified yells of men awakening into a nightmare, and the sobs, screams, and groans of those cut down by the hail of shot or skewered by the sharp, ragged splinters. The gull had disappeared behind the pall of her own gunsmoke, but Sir Francis leapt to his feet and snatched the smouldering match from the senseless hand of the drunken gunner. He glanced over the sights of the culverin and saw that it was still aimed into the swirling smoke behind which the gull lay. He pressed the match to the touch-hole. The culverin bellowed out a long silver gush of smoke and bounded back against its tackle. He could not see the strike of his shot, but he roared an order to those gunners down the line still sober enough to obey.
"Fire! Open fire! Keep firing as fast as you can!"
He heard a ragged salvo, but then saw many of the gun crews heave themselves up and stagger away drunkenly among the trees. Hal jumped onto the lip of the emplacement, shouting for Abberley and Daniel.
"Come on! Each of you bring a match and follow me. We must get across to the island."
Daniel was already helping Sir Francis reload the culverin, swabbing out the smoking barrel to douse the burning sparks.
"Avast there, Daniel. Leave that work to others. I need your help."
As they started off together along the shore, the fog bank that covered the gull drifted aside, and she fired her next broadside. It had been but 2 minutes since the first. Her gunners were fast and well-trained, and they had the advantage of surprise. Again the storm of shot swept the beach and ploughed into the forest with deadly effect. Hal saw one of their culverins struck squarely by a lead ball. The tackle snapped, and it was hurled backwards off its train, so that its muzzle pointed to the stars. The cries of the wounded and dying swelled in the pandemonium of despair as men deserted their posts and fled among the trees. The desultory return fire from the gun pits shriveled until there was only occasional bang and flash of cannon. Once the battery was silenced, the buzzard turned his guns on the remaining huts and the clumps of bush in which the Resolution's crew had taken shelter. Hal could hear the crew of the gull cheering wildly as they reloaded and fired.
"The Gull and Cumbrae!" they shouted.
There were no more broadsides, but a continuous stuttering roll of thunder as each gun fired as soon as it was ready. Their muzzle flashes flickered and flared within the sulphurous white smoke bank like the flames of hell. As he ran, Hal heard his father's voice behind him, fading with distance as he tried to rally his shattered, demoralized crew. Abberley ran at his shoulder, and Big Daniel was a few paces further back, losing ground to the two swifter runners.
"We will need more men to launch," Daniel panted. "They're heavy."
"You will not find them to help you now. They're all hog drunk or running for their very lives," Hal grunted.
But even as he spoke, he saw Ned Tyler speed out of the forest just ahead, leading five of his seamen. All seemed sober enough.
"Good man, Ned," Hal shouted, "but we must hurry. The buzzard will be sending his men onto the beach as soon as he has silenced our batteries."
They charged in a group across the shallow channel between them and the island. The tide was low, so at first they staggered through the glutinous mud flat that sucked at their feet, then plunged into the open water. They waded, swam, and dragged themselves across, the thunder of the gull's barrage spurring them onwards.
"There is only a breath of wind from the southwest," Big Daniel gasped.
as they staggered out streaming water onto the beach of the island. "It will not be enough to serve us." Hal did not reply, but broke off a dead branch and lit it from his slow match. He held it high to give himself light to see the path and ran on into the forest. In minutes they had crossed the island and reached the beach on the far side. Here Hal paused and looked across at the gull in the main channel. The dawn was coming on apace, and the night fled before it. The light was turning grey and silvery, the lagoon gleaming softly as a sheet of polished pewter. The buzzard was training his guns back and forth with the use of his anchor spring, swinging the gull on her moorings so that he could pick out any target on the shore. There was only the odd flash of answering fire from the gun pits on the beach, and the buzzard responded immediately to these, swinging his ship and bringing to bear the full power of his broadside, snuffing them out with a whirlwind of grape, flying sand and falling trees. All of Hal's party were blown by the hard run across the mud flats and the plunge through the channel.
"No time to rest,"
Hal's breath whistled in his throat. The devil ships were covered with mounds of cut branches, and they dragged them clear. Then they formed a ring around the first of these vessels, and each took a handhold.
"Together now,"
Hal exhorted them, and between them they just lifted the keels of the double-hulled vessel clear of the sand. It was heavy with its cargo, faggots of dried wood drenched with pitch to make it more flammable. They staggered down the beach with it, and dropped it into the shallows, where it wallowed and rolled in the wavelets, the square of dirty canvas on the stubby mast stirring idly in the light puffs of wind coming down from the heads. Hal took a turn of the painter around his wrist to prevent it drifting away.
"Oh, it's not enough wind," Big Daniel lamented, looking to the sky. "For the sweet love of God, send us a breeze."
"Keep your prayers for later." Hal secured the vessel and led them back at a run into the trees. They carried, shoved, and dragged two more of the boats down to the water's edge.
"Still not enough wind," Daniel looked across at the gull.
In the short time it had taken them to launch, the morning light had strengthened, and now, as they paused for a moment to regain their breath, they saw the buzzard's men leave their guns and, cheering wildly, brandishing cutlass and pike, swarm down into the boats.
"Will you look at those swine? They reckon the fight's over," grunted Ned Tyler. "Ha! They're going in for the looting."
Hal hesitated. Two more devil ships still lay at the edge of the forest, but to launch them would take too long.
"Then we must give them aught to change their opinion," he said grimly, and gripped the burning match between his teeth.
He waded out as deep as his armpits to where the first devil ship bobbed just off the beach and lobbed the slow match onto the high pile of cordwood. It spluttered and flared, blue smoke poured from it, and drifted away on the sluggish breeze as the pitch-soaked logs caught fire. Hal grabbed the painter attached to the bows and dragged her out into the channel. Within a dozen yards he was into deeper water and had lost the bottom. He swam round to the stern and found a purchase on it, kicked out strongly with both legs, and the boat moved away. Abberley saw what he was doing and plunged headlong into the lagoon. With a few powerful strokes, he reached Hal's side. With both of them swimming it out, the boat moved faster. With one hand on the stern, Hal lifted his head clear of the water to orientate himself and saw the flotilla of small boats from the gull heading in towards the beach. They were crowded with wildly yelling seamen, their weapons glinting in the morning light. So certain was the buzzard of his victory that he could have left only a few men aboard to guard the ship. Hal glanced over his shoulder and saw that both Ned and Daniel had followed his example. They had led the rest of the gang into the water and were clinging to the sterns of the two more craft, kicking the water to white froth behind them as they pushed out into the channel. From all three boats rose tendrils of smoke as the flames took hold in the loads of pitch-soaked firewood. Hal dropped back beside Abberley and set himself to work doggedly with both legs, pushing the boat ahead of him down the channel to where the gull lay at anchor. Then the incoming tide caught them firmly in its flood, and like a trio of crippled ducks, bore them along more swiftly. As Hal's boat swung its bows around, he had a better view of the beach. He recognized the flaming red head and beard of the buzzard in the leading longboat heading into the attack on the encampment, and fancied that even in the uproar he heard peals of his laughter carrying over the water. Then he had something else to think about, for the fire in the cargo above him gained a firm hold and roared into boisterous life. The flames crackled and leapt high in columns of dense black smoke. They danced and swayed as their heat created its own draught, and the single sail filled with more determination.
"Keep her moving," Hal panted to Abberley beside him. "Steer her 2 points more to larboard."
A gust of heat swept over him so fiercely that it seemed to suck the air from his lungs. He ducked his head beneath the surface and came up snorting, water cascading down his face from his sodden hair, but still kicking with all his strength. The Gull lay less than a cable's length dead ahead. Daniel and Ned followed close behind him, both their vessels wreathed in tarry black smoke and dark orange flame. The air over them quivered and throbbed with the heat like a desert mirage.
"Keep her going,"
Hal blurted. His legs were beginning to ache unbearably, and he spoke more to himself than to Abberley. The painter, tied to the bows of the devil ship, trailed back, threatening to wrap around his legs, but he kicked it away. There was no time to loosen it. He saw the first of the Gull's longboats reach the beach, and Cumbrae leap ashore, swinging his claymore in flashing circles around his head. As he landed on the sand, he threw back his head, uttered a blood-curdling Gaelic war cry, then went bounding up the steep beach. As he reached the trees, he looked back to make certain his men were following him. There he paused with his sword held high and stared back across the channel at the tiny squadron of devil ships blooming with smoke and flame and bearing down steadily upon his anchored Gull.
"Nearly there,"
Hal gasped, and the waves of heat that broke over his head seemed to fry his eyeballs in their sockets. He plunged his head under water again to cool it, and this time when he came up, he saw that the Gull lay only 50 yards ahead. Even above the crackling roar of the flames, he heard the buzzard's roar.
"Back! Back to the Gull! The bastards are sending fire ships at her!"
The frigate was stuffed with the booty of a long, hard privateering cruise, and her crew sent up a wild chorus of outrage as they saw the fruits of 3 years so endangered. They raced back to their boats even faster than they had charged up the beach. The buzzard stood in the bows of his, prancing and gesticulating, so that he threatened to upset her balance.
"Let me get my hands on the pox-ridden swine! I'll rip out their windpipes! I'll split their stinking—"
At that moment he recognised Hal's head at the stern of the leading fireship, lit by the full glare of the swirling flames, and his voice rose a full octave.
"It's Frankie's brat! By God, I'll have him! I'll roast his liver in his own fire!"
he shrieked, then lapsed into crimson-faced, inarticulate rage and hacked at the air with his claymore to spur his crew to greater speed. Hal was only a dozen yards now from the Gull's tall side and found fresh strength in his exhausted legs. Tirelessly, Abberley swam on, using a powerful frog kick that pushed back the water in a swirling wake behind him. With the buzzard's longboat bearing down swiftly upon them, they covered the last few yards, and Hal felt the fireship's bows thump heavily into the Gull's stern timbers. The push of the tide pinned her there, swinging her broadside so that the flames were fanned by the rising morning breeze to lick up along the Gull's side, scorching and blackening the timbers.
"Latch onto her,"
bellowed the buzzard.
"Get a line on her. Tow her off."
His oarsman shot straight in towards the fireship, but as they felt the full heat blooming out to meet them, they quailed. In the bows, the buzzard threw up his hands to cover his face, and his red beard crisped and singed.
"Back off!" he roared, "or we'll fry!"
He looked at his coxswain.
"Give me the anchor! I'll grapple her and we'll tow her off!"
Hal was on the point of diving and swimming underwater out of the circle of heat, but he heard Cumbrae's order. The painter still trailed around his legs, and he groped beneath the surface for the end, clenching it between his feet. Then he sank below the water and swam under the fireship's hull, coming up in the narrow gap between it and the Gull. The Gull's rudder stock broke the surface, and spitting lagoon water from his mouth, Hal threw a loop of the painter around the pintle. His face felt as though it were blistering as the heat beat down upon his head with hammer strokes, but he hitched the flaming craft securely to the Gull's stern. Then he dived up again and came up next to Abberley.
"To the beach," he gasped, "before the fire reaches the Gull's powder store."
Both struck out over arm, and Howell saw the longboat close by, almost close enough to touch. But the buzzard had lost all interest in them. He was whirling the small anchor around his head, and as Howell watched, he hurled it out over the burning vessel, hooking onto her.
"Lie back on your oars!" he shouted at his crew. "Tow her off!"
The boatmen went to it with all their strength. But immediately the fireship came up short on the mooring line Howell had tied, and their blades beat the water vainly. She would not tow, and now the planking of the Gull's side was smouldering ominously. Fire was the terror of all seamen. The ship was built of combustibles and stuffed with explosives, wood and pitch, canvas and hemp, tallow, spice barrels and gunpowder. The faces of the longboat's crew were contorted with terror. Even the buzzard was wild-eyed in the firelight as he looked up and saw the other two fireships drifting remorselessly upon him.
"Stop those others!" he pointed with his claymore. "Turn them away!"
Then he turned his attention back to the burning vessel moored to the Gull. By now, Hal and Abberley were 50 yards away, swimming for the beach. But Hal rolled onto his back to watch and trod water. He saw at once that the buzzard's efforts to tow away the fireship had failed. Now he rowed around to the Gull's bows and scrambled up onto her deck. As his crew followed him, he roared,
"Buckets! Get a bucket chain going! Pumps! 10 men to the pumps! Spray the flames!"
They scurried to obey, but the fire was spreading swiftly, eating into the stern and dancing along the gunwale, reaching up hungrily towards the furled sails on their outstretched yards. One of the Gull's longboats had grappled Ned's fireship, and with frantically beating oars was dragging it clear. Another was trying to get a line on Big Daniel's fireship, but the flames forced them to keep their distance. Each time they succeeded in hooking on, Daniel swam round and cut the rope with a stroke of his knife. The men in the longboat, who carried muskets and pistols, were firing wildly at his bobbing head. But though the balls kicked up spray all around him, he seemed invulnerable. Abberley had swum on ahead, and now Hal rolled onto his belly and followed him back to the beach. Together they raced up the white sand and into the shot-shattered forest. Sir Francis was still in the gunpit, where they had left him, but he had gathered around him a scratch crew of the Resolution survivors. They were reloading the big gun as Hal ran up to him and shouted,
"What do you want me to do?"
"Take Abberley with you to find some more of the men. Load another culverin. Bring the Gull under fire." Sir Francis did not look up from the gun, and Howell ran back among the trees. He found half a dozen men, and he and Abberley kicked and dragged them out of the holes and bushes where they were cowering, and led them back to the silenced battery. In the few short minutes it had taken him to gather the gun crew, the scene out in the lagoon had changed completely. Daniel had guided his fireship up to the Gull's side and had secured her there. Her flames were adding to the confusion and panic on board the frigate. Now he was swimming back to the beach. He had seized two of his men, who could not swim, and was dragging them through the water. The Gull's crew had snared Ned's fireship. They had lines on it and were dragging it clear. Ned and his three fellows had abandoned it, and were also floundering back towards the shore. But even as Hal watched, one gave up and slipped below the surface. The sight of the drowning spurred Hal's anger. He poured a handful of powder into the culverin's touch-hole as Abberley used an iron marlin spike to train the barrel around. It bellowed deafeningly, and Hal's men shouted with delight as the full charge of grape smashed into the longboat towing Ned's abandoned craft. It disintegrated at the blast, and the men packed into her were hurled into the lagoon. They splashed about, screaming for aid and trying to clamber into another longboat nearby, but it was already overcrowded, and the men in her tried to beat off the frantic seamen with their oars. Some, though, managed to get a hold on the gunwale, and yelling and fighting among themselves, they caused the longboat to list heavily until suddenly she capsized. The water around the burning hulks was filled with wreckage and the heads of struggling swimmers.